Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Neil Baker Psychic Hour. I'm Kristen. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
And today we are discussing how to protect yourself and offering psychic readings for our callers. So welcome, everybody, to the show. And what do we want to tell people? How to follow us, of course. You can join us on Facebook and on Twitter. Many of you have called our show many, many times, but have not joined us on Facebook, and you have Facebook accounts. So if you'd like to get readings on the show, we definitely like your support on our social media sites. That's kind of all we ask from our callers. So please do support those sites, Neil and Kristen Baker, Neil Baker Psychic. There's a Twitter account and Blog Talk Radio. You may follow us here and keep abreast of our show schedule. 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. And 562-596-7818 is the number to call for conversation beyond what the show can accommodate. So that's what we suggest that you do if you're calling the show and have further questions beyond what the show can offer. Yeah, the readings are structured to be short, so they're not really a substitute for an in-depth conversation. So I want to put that out there to those of you who are listening. And promoting, protecting yourself. I'm reading on the screen. It says promote, but protecting yourself from negative energy. Let's get into that.
Down promoting.
Do you know what? Neil doesn't know this, but do you know what just happened? Like
what?
10 minutes ago, I was grinding coffee. I was cleaning the coffee grinder and grinding coffee, and I had no receptacle underneath the grinder, so I left it unattended and walked back, and there was a pile of coffee all beneath on the coffee grinder and all over the counter. Did you know?
Well,
I'm glad you didn't see that one. So that's why we got a little bit of a late start today. I was cleaning that mess up.
Well, you know, I've always wanted to live near a coffee plantation, so I probably could have gone down there and kind of gotten accustomed to the idea that we are surrounded by coffee.
Didn't we have someone call us recently that had a coffee plantation on their property?
Their family owns a coffee
plantation that sells beans to other sources.
Coffee's great. You know, I mean, the tragedy about coffee is that it destroys the rainforest. And so not good.
Right.
Not
but, good, you but. Know, if you source your coffee from places that roast, you know, coffee that you know has a small carbon imprint on the earth, which I do. It's much better. It's much better, and they actually promote, you know, like one of the coffees I recently bought, songbird colonies and things like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's ways of what some of the plantations have minimal effect on the environment, and they're not tearing down the trees and everything and hurting the wildlife. And, you know, I mean, I started drinking coffee when I was, I think, 5 years old. I had my first cup, and I've been drinking it ever since. But then there's that great conflict about coffee and wildlife. And, you know, since we are severe advocates of wildlife, there's always that concern. But anyways.
Well, you know, before we get to our discussion, I'm going to say one more thing about caffeine. Do you remember that story recently that I told you about? There was it was some university in Great Britain was doing an experiment on caffeine and its effect during exercise on the human body.
Mm-hmm.
And they dosed, instead of 0.03, they did 0.3.
Oh, yeah.
And actually two people almost died.
Right,
they went into, you know, I believe, you know, had started to have seizures and so on and so forth. And luckily, because they got emergency treatment right away, they survived, but it was a long, long recovery for them. And I could think the university was fine, like $50,000, the equivalent of such, because it's
in a moderate amount, you know, caffeine, it fights cancer, it keeps you alert. I mean, there's benefits to coffee. But again, you know, for those of you who are coffee drinkers, try to support the environment and be conscious of the coffee you buy and enjoy it, but not at the cost of hurting our wildlife and our natural environment. Okay, so we're talking about protection. Obviously, we were discussing what is protection. We have the protection of our body by clothes. We have our home. We have national defense. We have certain forms of the physicality of our protection. Then we get into the idea of the protection of our rights, which is not so much about physicality, but the protection for freedom of speech, the protection for religion, the protection to exercise sexuality. Those protections that we have, what they really are safeguards. So when we say that we're protecting, it's a positive word, protect. What we're really saying is by protecting, we're also defending. It's a defensive gesture as much as it is an inwardly secure gesture. So there's a sort of dichotomy about that. And we need to have those protections because there's obviously forces in the world that are life-threatening. You know, so we have forms of protection, streetlights, traffic signals, police force protection. When we get into the idea of astral, etheric protection, none of these items or themes exist. It has nothing to do with physicality. So how do we protect the soul? And we're not talking about the soul in terms of beliefs. We're not talking about that. That's the physicality of protection, our rights or inalienable rights. But we're talking about the idea of how do we protect ourselves soul-wise, spirit-wise, from forces that cannot be seen. And we don't mean unseen forces like Big Brother, but we mean or germ warfare or something.
We're not talking
like
about physical, planetary.
Obviously. We're talking about
more
the
subtle
astral realm and how the astral realm can actually find its way into our soul and spirit and threaten us, which is not going to be really the vocabulary and dialogue of what we would otherwise consider to be protecting the self. So how do we go about doing that? Well, first of all, you have to go into the fascinating study of psychic energy and etheric energy, past life energy, and the whole astral realm of experience in terms of what's out there. I was just reading an article about the being frozen in sleep, you know, when you wake up, you're
sleep
frozen,
paralysis.
Sleep paralysis, and that some theories are that demons are actually seizing your body.
Where did you read that?
Well, this is common knowledge, but there was somewhere in my readings, I came across it again, but this is a known fact. This is going way back. This is really knowledge going way back. Before.
So this is something you read,
an
older article. Okay. Well,
how do we gauge that?
I think that's possible, actually, by the way.
Oh, I'm a firm believer in it. That's why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about a different kind of protection to the body. And this article was suggesting, which I think was mostly right, that this sleep paralysis, sometimes it's just, you know, doctors might explain it's, you know, you're waking up too soon, your body's not awake, there's something going on in the brain pattern, or there's not enough oxygen for a minute, or you kind of lost your breath while you were sleeping, so you're waking up and trying to regain your breath. There's all kinds of medical explanations for sleep paralysis. But when we take it further and we have the idea that the astral body actually leaves the physical body at night and by way of the silver cord ventures out into the astral realm, what that spirit does, that soul does, is it enters what's called the wilderness of the astral realm. And in that wilderness, it still encompasses a scope of duality, good and evil, positive and negative energies, for want of a better word. And in that respect, it's almost like deep sea diving, where you could, you know, it's safe and not safe, or going into any kind of wilderness where there can be safe animals and unsafe animals, or going into, for God, a region, a nation, a district, a suburb, a neighborhood, where you know there's potential danger going on, even when you think there isn't. So the same thing applies to the astral realm, because in the astral realm, we have all kinds of things. We have angels visit that area, guides, spirits, and, of course, lower energies, including demons.
Well, you know, I was going to say something regarding that sleep paralysis, because, you know, sometimes you can be on medications and it can cause sleep paralysis, which brings me to, you know, one of our callers last Wednesday talked to us about, asked us about ayahuasca. And I wanted to mention something we didn't really say on the show is what happens oftentimes when you open yourself up with an unnatural substance is you can invite, not only is it a health risk, but you can invite negative energies in. And it's easier if you're opening the third eye to protect yourself against, you know, demonic energy or something that can slip in if you're completely clean of any substance.
Sure.
And so something like, you know, any given medication that might make sleep paralysis happen maybe is a link to opening up that dark side of the astral realm to a person.
That's true. But the reason I don't, you know, I'm sure there are several psychedelic drugs out there and hallucinatory drugs out there that can open up the third eye. But in my estimation, taking those drugs would be synonymous with drinking and driving.
Right.
Doesn't mean you can't drive. It just means you're going to be reckless enough and you're not going to have that protection of logic and thinking that would otherwise be necessary. When we enter the astral realm, we're very vulnerable. So we're vulnerable to what? We're vulnerable to entities that have no physical body, that are well aware of how to attack the psychic energy of a person. So when you're out there, you're somewhat vulnerable because what you're leaving behind is a form of protection, your physical body.
Right. And I mean, I think when you're less versed too in astral projecting, you know, for me, I'm astral projecting almost every night in my sleep, but I end up in these areas sometimes where, you know, it's not exactly the best area necessarily because I'm wandering in the astral realm.
That's why there's,
I'm not as controlled as I could be in terms of being able to set my course ahead of me.
Right. And that's why there needs to be a deliberate mapping of consciousness when you enter the astral realm, which can be prepared by your own sense of meditation and awareness and purpose before you can go to sleep. But even then, you can be vulnerable to the idea that when you're entering the astral realm, that's your soul. That's your naked soul. And that soul now has all elements of karma in it without the protection of the body. So if that soul has a certain element of past life karma where some evil had been done or you had encountered other energies of a negative variety, if those energies are evidently available at the time of your astral journey, you can be under attack. The same, you know, it's like entering a place where, picture you go to a bar and you're having a drink at the bar and into the bar comes one of your old enemies and you don't have any form of protection there and it's a bar basically on the border where there's little law enforcement and you're vulnerable. When you go into the wilderness of the astral realm and you don't have proper protection, you're susceptible to much stronger energies than what you think you have as an astral being. And so those things can attack.
Right. And there's a range. I mean, there's low-level entities that aren't necessarily going to do harm to the person that's astral projecting, but then you can encounter, you know, much more malevolent.
There's a lot of harassment, in the astral realm, you can have lower entities that just recognize that this is a soul out in the astral realm that's attached to a sleeping body, and lower entities can torment and just aggravate the sort of flow of energy while you're out there. And that sometimes, like someone, well, the analogy would be like you leave your home, you drive out of your driveway, and two suspicious characters see you leave, and they decide to tag your home or break into your home while you're gone. There are entities out there that will take advantage of the basic good soul energy of a human being. So they are out there. And some of them are basic entities that have never been in the body before. Others are people who have crossed over but have lingered in the astral realm with somewhat dark negative energy forms that are still somewhat inclined to want to attach themselves to living human beings. And so we have this attitude that we need to protect ourselves. So how do we do that? How do we do that? We do that by, first of all, you know, people will say, well, put a white light around your energy. There's some sense to that, because what you're doing, you're providing an energy source. First of all, you're aware of the soul and the spirit, and you're providing an energy source of protection. So it's like saying, it's a cold day, I'm going to put some warm clothes on.
Right.
Well, obviously, when we're dealing with light, that's a good way of looking at it in terms of that. Others would be, hey, you know what? I don't feel real safe today. I think I'll call somebody and escort me to the store today.
So that's using like a spirit,
guide, angels. Call on them. They're here. You know, you just have to know who you're calling on. But that's a form of protection. The other is that if you're in your dream state, we have an awareness, a consciousness, where we can actually will the dream world into cooperating with us. So in confronting an evil spirit, we can say, be gone in the name of God, blah, blah, blah. You can recite something. One thing that I've done in terms of being, when I was younger, and really in terms of being locked into the attitude of confronting an evil entity, is I sometimes blow air out of my mouth. And that seems to chase them away. I don't know why, but it has an intensity of energy that just shatters them. It might be that the oxygen level to the brain and all that is accommodating the experience for the better welfare of your being. So that's one aspect you can do. Some people, amulets and crosses and things like that, sage, they all have their place, but I think there's nothing better than the general attitude of mind in terms of focusing on, in the protection realm of how one protects themselves and how one recognizes.
Right. But shielding oneself with light, I think, while it may be, you know, a start in terms of being effective, I've got to stop that ringing on my computer. I apologize for that. In terms of that, I mean, just shielding yourself with white light isn't necessarily going to ward off negative energy. And you've got to know more intricately what you're dealing with if you're shielding yourself.
Well,
in my estimation.
The consciousness of the third eye and the sixth chakra is important.
There's a lot of people saying to shield yourself with a protective light, and they don't know what the heck they're talking about. They don't know what they're shielding themselves from, because they really don't know the ins and outs of the astral realm.
Well, yeah.
You know,
so
when we're talking about
where
people,
we get into the idea of research, researching what the chakras are, the full content of the chakras, how they spin and what kind of energy they put out can be a form of protection. So I would recommend that you learn the chakra systems and learn the content of the chakra systems and learn how to manage and control them. Know when to pull energy in and when to pull energy out on any level. The other is that the education of the third eye will help one to discern negative from positive energy. On a primitive level, we say, well, you know, we get a bad vibe about this person. I just don't get a good vibe about
them. But we're talking about instinct, you know, lower brain and gut level feelings.
Instinct is kind of like the foot pedaling of psychic energy. You pedal through the bicycle, so to speak, with your feet. Instinct is sort of the foot pedaling of psychic energy. We learn how to be psychic through a form of instinct, because the instinct is, that's what it essentially is. The instinct is coming from knowledge from without. It's what we were born into. It's embedded in our genes and our consciousness and our deeper brain. And in that same area is the astral realm knowledge, is where the soul inhabits the body and where the third eye is contained. Now, that third eye does have a power of energy that can be put out. We define it like in the science fiction films where the ray is coming out of the robot's third eye, or when we, you know, the evil stare, we think we have energy coming out of our eyes. Well, that's from the attitude of the third eye. Even in certain cultures where they paint the third eye on the brow, it's the eye of God, the eye of consciousness, and essentially the eye of eternity. So in that formation of the sixth chakra, which inhabits the third eye through the pineal gland, we're getting the attitude of how to put out a ray of energy that's conducted by consciousness, conscious thought, that is directly connected to protection.
Mm-hmm.
So we can actually do it through the sophisticated methods of having developed our third eye in such a way that we can dialogue it out into the universe. So it's a matter of mind control from within to mind control from without. And that presents itself as a very persuasive energy would otherwise counter, it avoids an attack from the astral realm, and one way one can protect themselves. The other is recognizing who your karmic rivals are. That's a hard one.
It is. That's definitely more challenging.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
Because a lot of times karmic rivals will not necessarily come in as rivals.
No, a lot of people come in to teach you lessons, and sometimes your arch enemy becomes your best friend.
Well, yeah, and what I'm saying is there may be someone who is a karmic rival that comes in as, you know, who seems very friendly, you know, and we don't know what that karmic history is, and perhaps the relationship can be very dangerous to us.
Yes, that's true. So how do you tell? First of all, you have to kind of get it. You have to go with that vibe and see how you feel about the person. We get a lot of calls from people asking, I don't know if I can trust this person. Can you tell me what's going on? Can you see the future? Do you know what's happening? Well, if we see the individual as a karmic connection, it's a much easier read.
And because
you can almost deliberately see the steps leading to a certain conclusion.
Well, in talking about karmic connections, I mean, most of the connections that we have on Earth are karmic. I mean, we're re-encountering people that we've shared past lives with.
Well, yes, but also transcendent.
Well,
some of our energies that we connect to the planet, people are purely transcendent people, and that's
right.
The variety of choice that we have that makes it very pleasurable about meeting people.
Right, but if we are individuals that are stuck in karma, we're more likely to encounter karmic people than transcendent people. So if we are living in a transcendent phase of our life, then we're going to be more inclined to either meet karmic mates that can be, whether they're friends or, you know, lovers or whatever, that have a transcendent possibility, or purely transcendent individuals, versus being stuck in total karma.
Yeah, well, that's true. And sometimes the karmic elements we have to face because we have to resolve the karma. And so it's important. So when we do get those difficult cases and we have to inform people, you know, you're going through a test, this is a karmic energy you have to go through. And a lot of times people will find that they can't escape a relationship. It's not so easy. Then we know that there's a sort of adhesive karmic connection between two people that where the universe is compelling them to work it out, even though it may come to some consequence of negativity in the long run. And it also is accompanied by the way that the karma may finally be resolved. You hear a lot of people say, even in courtroom situations, well, I'm glad it's over. I lost, but I'm glad it's over. I can move on now. That's so telling a statement when you get into the idea, not just of civil actions, one from against another, because that's usually where the civil actions occur and where the statements are made, more or less the criminal courts. But in that attitude, we're also getting a taste of what it is to have karma. Well, I'm done with that karma. I'm glad it's over. I'm moving on. And then we have to understand that karma provides for us an education of protection. Because, well, I learned. You hear people in the court, well, I learned, to have a better contract. Or I learned not to trust people. I'm not going to just loan money out without some kind of promissory note. We learn from our experiences just as we learn from our karma. So sometimes when karma hits us, the ultimate conclusion is that we're going to learn from it, and God willing that we breathe another day, another month, another year, and so forth, that we can now apply those rules of logic and learning to our experience. So experience is very valuable in terms of the idea of not just the physicality of protection, but the karmic and somewhat astral realm attitude of protection comes with the experience of past life energies resolved and transcendent attitudes being implanted. So we have that element as well. And so in that respect, it becomes a kind of interesting dialogue in terms of hopefully how we can begin to express some kind of security measures when we are looking at the protection of the soul and spirit.
Okay. Well, let's take a caller, Neil, and then we'll get back to our subject. Hello. Hello. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Chris.
Oh, hi, Chris. I'm hearing my voice back. Do you have a radio on or a computer on with our show?
I don't. I have it on speaker.
That might be why I'm hearing an echo. Chris, what is your birth date?
It is 12/21/69.
2169. And I recognize the number you're calling from, actually. So I think I might know who you're connected to here. 5/6/16/15/31/4. 31/4, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's the reason for your call today, Chris?
Oh, I was just seeing if there's anybody on the other side trying to come through.
On the other side trying to come through for you. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's just hold on a sec. 31/4. Hold on, 30.
47.
47. You just turned 47.
Right.
5/6.
Yeah. Okay, Chris, let's take this slowly. First of all, I'm getting a female energy. So let's start there. If there seems to be a female. Now, let's look at this cautiously because the strong letter S or R seems to be part of the name of the person. I think it's connected to the name. So far, without giving me too many details, anyone crossover that was a female that would be of interest to you?
Yes.
Now, in that person, is there an S or an R in their name?
Yes.
Okay. So if we're correct here, what we may be getting is the very first three steps of communication with this spirit. Now, I don't know who it is yet.
Do we want a name?
And I'm
not yet.
Not quite yet. I don't know who it is yet because I want to kind of see how we can separate the facts from the fiction and so-called put this forth. There seems to be a sickness involved in the person's life. So I really feel like there was a lingering body sickness with this person. So without getting, again, details, if I'm wrong, don't correct me, but was there any lingering sickness with the person that you have in mind?
Yes.
So it wasn't like a car crash or a gunshot or a suicide. There was a lingering sickness.
Yeah, literally lifetime.
Yeah. This person, Chris, I'm taking this cautiously, but this is, seems to be the energy that's connecting to you from the other side as we're speaking. And there seems to be, well, the spirit seems to be aware that you are reaching out to her. So the spirit doesn't seem to be in any, well, let's just say she's not in a real comfortable position. It's not like she's playing a harp in heaven. There seem, when we cross over, we all have karma to deal with, and we talk to our guides and try to figure out what adjustments we need to make in terms of the evolution of our soul.
Unless we're transcendent.
Unless we're totally transcendent, which I think she had a life of probably suffering, which finally took her. But she did say that at the point of her departure, there was just a quick, sudden lapse of breath. And from that point, there was a release of tension. There seemed to be something about her that said, okay, got this book done. I'm done with this part. I've got other parts to do, but at least this chapter is over. So there seems to be something about written material with her. Did this person ever write you or text you, or do you have any letters of hers or writing material?
Not really, just Christmas or birthday.
What? I'm sorry, say that again?
Cards.
Yeah, but that's
it
right.
Was just like,
so, cards, she sent you cards?
Yeah.
Well, the attitude about the cards goes a little bit deeper than you may think, because it centers closely around your birth date when you mention Christmas cards. So there's something, to me, she's reaching your heart. So we're talking about the heart chakra, at least in the attitude of her trying to connect to you.
Do we have her birth, by the way, just out of curiosity?
I don't know if I want it.
You don't want it yet? Okay.
Was there any effect in her heart or brain in terms of her demise?
Yeah, she had brain cancer.
Yeah. Mm. So the brain, see, what she was just saying to me, Chris, was that she had a great heart, but then she mentioned brain, meaning that her heart was in her brain, but the brain is what took her. So she was a very compassionate person. She would have had a different kind of life had she not had to work through this and suffer through this. Brain surgeries, brain tumors and whatnot are basically, they're not long-lived situations. You go through it. I mean, brain cancer, if you're alive 7 years, I mean, that's miraculous. But I don't know how long her diagnosis was, from her diagnosis and then the prognosis and then her death, but I would assume it would have been under 7 years. Is that true?
Yeah, that was probably about the length of it, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what she's more or less telling me. Again, I want to add to this. From her edge of energy, and I don't mean to be patronizing you or giving you stereotype comments, but there's a great deal of love that she seems to be moving through you in terms of, and it almost seems like if it wasn't this life, there's a past life family connection. So was she connected at all to your family through either blood or friendship?
She was a stepmother.
Oh, okay. So there seemed to be something of a family connection to her. And I said either through blood or friendship. And the stepmother is not really, it's like a blood, but it's more like a friend. Someone that takes
right.
you in, so that attitude is there. Did she ever, in her lifetime, ever attempt to draw anything? Was there any attempt to be an artist, even in a recreational way?
Yeah, she liked to paint.
Yeah. So, Chris, I mean, It seems like as we're working through this, we're having a somewhat of a significant, valid connection with her. She's talking, she's bringing, forgive me, because I hate to get too much like a stereotype, but she's talking about a bicycle. Why she's mentioning a bicycle, you know, sometimes when these spirits talk and it sounds like these things are so trite and commonplace, but still I would feel wrong if I didn't share it with you. So was there ever an incident with a bicycle? Did you get a bike for your birthday, Christmas? Did you have a red bike? Anything with a bike?
Not that I can remember from particular.
Did you have a bike in your own? I mean, did you have a bike, a bicycle?
Yeah, I used to have to ride a bike to school.
Oh, okay. And what color was it?
It was blue and red.
Yeah. Okay, so, and was she alive during that time?
Yes.
And were you connected with her during that time?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is something that I think is significant to part of her attitude about, there seems to be a loving fondness about that you came into her life just as much as she came into yours. And that through your school years, there seems to be something there, Chris, that she still retains. Now, I don't know of what sentimental value there is going on here, but there seems to be some sense of attachment she has according to your school years. Was she an active participant in your school activities? Did she involve herself there?
Not that much. I mean, when I was in college, I saw her more when I was in college.
Okay, so how old were you when she came into your life?
When I first met her, I was like 16. But she came into my life, I guess, when I was like 12 or 13.
Ah, so you were about 12 when she came into your life.
Right. Yeah, my dad was kind of living a double life with her.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a little bit complex, but you were basically in the sixth, seventh grade.
Right.
And that's still the attitude of bicycle riding, if you will. I mean, it's a little bit above the grammar school, but certainly teenagers ride bikes to school, and maybe she wasn't actively involved in your life back in that time. But did she have children of her own?
Yes, she did.
And did she have boys?
She had three boys and two girls.
Okay, so what she's also demonstrating is that, I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but she accepts you as... When she went, she ultimately, or maybe right after she crossed over, she accepted you as her son. Was this a good relationship you had with her?
Yeah.
And did you
yes,
feel
it was.
Like, as a stepmother, did you feel like she really loved you as a natural mother?
Yeah.
Well, Chris, you know, that's what I'm getting from her. So what we have is the establishment of the dialogue from the other side that's saying, Chris, I recognize you as my son. I love you, and my heart goes to you. I think she's also maybe suggesting that there was a past life connection between the two of you. So who in the family was actually born in the month of June?
She was.
So she was born in the month of June. You're really being level with me?
Yeah, I think she was born at the end of June.
Yeah. Well, if we're correct, and I hope we're correct on this, then as we're moving through this, she was born in June, and she mentioned June to me. So I didn't know why she said June, but that's was at least what she said.
And that's, you know, the sixth chakra, and she had brain cancer. That's why I wanted to find out her birth date. But can we get her whole birth date now?
He might know it, maybe not, but we could ask for it.
I don't even know. I know she was like 80 when she passed, so she must have been born in like in the 30s.
What year did she cross over?
July 2nd.
She passed August 23rd of 2014.
23rd she of 2014.
Born, yeah, actually, she was born on the 1st of July of 1934. July 2nd of 1934.
Oh, July 2nd.
July 2nd.
So yeah.
July 2nd.
Hmm.
1934, you 1934? Said?
1934. 9, 19,
8, 7. 9, 19, 22, 8. 3, 4, 5, 26, 8. Well, so much for June.
Yeah,
I, you
yeah.
know, the attitude well, about June, about June. The only thing I would say about June is, well, if you allow me a little bit of liberty here, it one, we're very close to June. We're at the very beginning of July, and June might have been the month, the last full month prior to her being born. So there could be some allusion to that, because by the end of June, she was born but 2 days later. So maybe in there, there's something. The attitude of the attitude, let's see, of what's going on here, 9, 2, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10. She's an 8 to your 4, 34, 44, 54, 1960, she would have had a change in life, 9 years prior to your birth. Okay, but we don't need to get into that so much right now, Chris. The message, there seems to be a connection, one. It seems to be a loving connection. There seems to be enough material here to work with. There seems to be some sense of I don't know what it was, you know, if she died in 2013 and you were
in 14.
Huh?
Yeah, she died in 2014.
She was 80.
Oh, 2014?
She was 80 when she died.
Yeah.
And so she just turned 80, 2014.
You were roughly around 44,
right.
45. Was she buried as opposed to being cremated?
No, she was cremated.
She was cremated. Was there
yes.
anything, what? Well, the reason that I'm asking you this is because I've seen you with flowers, and I sometimes associate flowers with caskets. So I don't know why. Was there any kind of flower exchange you had with her with flowers during her sickness?
No, not that I remember, because I couldn't make her funeral.
Hmm.
I don't know where the flowers is coming from, Chris, unless you have a story to tell me anything pertinent about flowers before we move on. But if you don't, I'm not sure what the attitude is with flowers and why. Were her ashes spread, or did someone keep her ashes?
No, they were spread.
And where were they spread?
Out on the ocean.
I don't know. What is your situation living now? Are you living in a home or an apartment, or where are you living?
A home.
A home. Are there flowers in that house right now?
Yeah, I just bought some, as a
matter
of fact.
That's what it is.
You just bought flowers?
Yeah.
That's
I'm looking at them right now. I just bought them.
He's looking at flowers. Well, this is the first time he's called, so he doesn't know exactly. So that was it. That's it.
Chris,
that's why flowers are coming in.
What this means from her spirit is that she's been around you. She's actually been around you, and she was mentioning flowers in the hope that it would finally come to the conclusion that she was around you when you bought those flowers, and she's around you now. So you
have,
I'm safe to say, you have an active spirit around you, Chris, who is very much loving and very much involved with our conversation, and you know, for the crudeness of the radio show, is trying to make some established connection with you, but I would say this is her.
Well, Chris,
right,
we hope
because
that
I know.
Helps. Well, go ahead.
Yeah,
go
because
ahead.
I know you originally said an R and an S, and she definitely has that in her first and last names.
You can don't give us her last name, but the first name you can give us
is Arlene.
Arlene, and that's a real R sound too.
And her middle name is Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the flower reference too.
The rose was what I thought her name was.
So.
Yeah.
I didn't want to say it, but that was the R and the S was the rose that came in, and I think she's playing a little bit of having her own liberty about the flowers. So, you know, I hope this is a good introduction to communicating. Her spirit is alive and very loving towards you, and the appreciation of having this time to converse with you, however, you know, clumsy it's been, if you will, but accurate, is sincere.
Right.
Okay.
Right, and I appreciate it, and I thank you.
Thanks. All right. So, Neil.
So, what do we have in our time?
We have about 8 minutes left. So not too much. What I wanted to say about protecting yourself from karma or people that you're connected to karmically, sometimes, and I've known cases that we've dealt with personally, where there are karmic people in an individual's life, and that person isn't even aware of how detrimental those people are. It can get very tricky. There may not be an obviously negative connection with those people, but they can be very harmful.
Yeah.
Not knowing the past life connection, then we've discovered, you know, past life connections between people and the difficult nature of those relationships, which is not totally evident by the physical manifestation of the relationships. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. How we sense and feel what the energy is of another person, it goes on many levels. It can be very instinctual. It can be a very primitive impulse. But if we are acutely aware of our third eye, we can almost perceive messages about a person, whether it appears in our dream world during a dream situation, or whether there's a flash of something that you've retained in your memory, that gets into that deja vu thing. But beyond that, it gets to a feeling like you can almost imagine where you were with this person.
Right. Well, you can, I know instances where there are connections that feel like past life connections, but to truly know the karmic implications of the present life relationship is not possible, because even though there's that familiarity and that shared, that what's thought to be a shared past life connection, you know, the karma is too dense to actually see how harmful that relationship or even location, you know.
This is, you know, the people who take the taxi rides and they get raped, they let somebody in their home and they get killed.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier in the show about, you know, walking into a bar and not knowing, you know, whether the person is going to be a negative entity. And there's a case that happened, I think it was in Texas, where a woman met a man at the bar. He was like a fitness trainer or something, and he ended up killing her. This is what I'm, you know.
Well, you know, you could say that this was a sociopath or a psychopath or just a downright cold-blooded murderer, and it was just bad timing. And that might be the case. However, in the karmic elements, we sometimes, God forbid, encounter our killers and we don't even know it.
Yeah.
So that blanket of unawareness. So the first thing is common sense. Use common sense. Don't get to know somebody before you just totally trust somebody according to the circuit.
Right. But we can encounter someone who may have murdered us in a past life, and we may not necessarily, they may not murder us in this life. The karma might have been softened to a degree where we're not going to have that kind of interaction, but you can be still locked into a karmic past life situation and, you know, and hampered in terms of your, you know, forward motion in this life karmic relationship.
This is in terms of domestic business. I was once called to do a reading with this businessman, and he had me come to his office and just had me
sit in the chair
in different chairs
story.
And give and and when, you know, after the office was closed and he was the manager.
And saying for you to perceive the energy of the people that had, you know, typically used that chair, each chair.
And so I would sit in these different chairs and give the impression of the person who sat in each chair, and he was nodding. And then he said, which chair should I not trust? Which chair is out to do me ill? And I went back and sat in the chairs, and I sat in this one chair and I said, don't trust this person. Very bad karma, very bad karma. He shook his head. He shook my hand. He said, thank you. That's exactly what I was looking for. And, you know, he had an awareness because of a certain action. But what he did was he called upon a psychic to get validation, because in the subtleties of the astral realm, these things can be detected. It's not something that we all are just capable of doing, but at least this man had an intuition, had a sense.
Right.
Maybe there was something concretely that happened in his world to make him very suspicious, but he quite didn't have all the facts. But when I told him, don't trust this person, I won't give too much information, I gave a few details along with that comment, which
supported the, you know,
absolutely
supported your premise and validated for him that you were talking about the right person, because they were psychic.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, you know, protection, it's a fascinating discussion. We're not even touching it hardly, but it's something to think about. And I would encourage everybody to kind of investigate their third eye and their own intuition and the sense of exploring not just the element of protection for the body and the mind, but protection for the soul as well.
Okay. So with that, Neil, I think we're going to close the show for the day. We only have a couple of minutes left. So we are back on the air Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. And we will speak with you then. Thanks.